Vanessa Van Edwards is a recovering awkward person who teaches people how to be more successful with people. That's strange. How did that happen? Vanessa was a great student, but as she says, she was terrible with people until one day she discovered that she could study people and interacting with people the same way that she studied math and science. And in fact, she used math and science to break down social interactions. She set up a lab. She started running experiments on everything from conversation starters to reading facial expressions. And she shares everything she's learned in her hit book, Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People. This book breaks down social interactions so you can succeed, whether that's thriving in networking events or having a more fulfilling dating life. You can pick up Captivate at katavi.net/captivate. And you're going to learn in this conversation, how can awkwardness be a part of your own unique brand of charisma? As a recovering awkward person myself, I was very interested in this. And how can you get the most out of conferences, even if you're an introvert? I have trouble with conferences sometimes, so I'm definitely going to be using these tips on the next conference that I go to. And what is the Franklin effect? And how can the Franklin effect make you more likable, even to your mortal enemies? Here is Vanessa Van Edwards. I'm here with Vanessa Van Edwards. And Vanessa, I love that you call yourself a recovering awkward person. How awkward were you?
So awkward. I had a headgear and everything. I don't know if that is... that makes it a certified awkward person. But I was, I had a few years with a headgear on the playground.
I even forgot about headgears. I haven't seen one in so long.
Oh man. Like it was like full around the head and neck kind of headgear. It was a really rough couple of years because at the same time I had such bad social anxiety that I would get hives on the way into school. So I was also covered in red bumps from head to toe.
Yeah, actually, we might need to fill in some of our younger listeners on what headgear even is, right?
Oh, no. Headgear is this horrible contraption that when you have braces, it's a metal and fabric harness for your head that hooks onto your teeth and is held in the back by a strap.
Yeah, it's mostly for like overbites, right? It's
exactly.
It's not Invisalign. It's a little bit more.
It's basically, I mean, pronounced. It's screaming. It's an alarm to the bullies to say, please come pick on me. Please pick on me. That's what it is.
So is that how the awkwardness manifested itself? What were the consequences of that awkwardness?
For me, it was that I was really afraid of any kind of social interaction outside the classroom. So the classroom was actually okay for me. Inside the classroom, I was okay raising my hand. I could talk to teachers, but for recess, playground, camps, then as I got older, dances, like as I got even older, group projects, interviews, talking to professors. And so it became this real liability because what was kind of a, you know, funny, awkward thing as a kid, socializing is a huge part of career success. And so it just became worse and worse.
And when did that change?
There was a big moment in my life where I sort of had viewed IQ and PQ separately. I had never actually even heard of the idea of PQ. I was all about IQ, SAT scores, GPA, all those wonderful acronyms. And someone introduced me, my psychology professor introduced me. I'd taken psychology 110 as a way of like, maybe this will help with people. And my professor had us do a group project where we had to work with other people to write a big paper. And I went into his office and I was like, I will write double the amount of pages if I can work by myself. And he was very kind. He looked at me and said, you know, this paper is not about the writing skills. It's about the people skills. And you need to start to study for people like you study for math or science. And I had never thought about soft skills or people skills in that way. I always kind of thought that people were these mystery boxes. You couldn't study them. There were no formulas. There were no blueprints. And what he tried to show me was that actually you can study for soft skills like a science. There is a hard side to soft skills. And so that was the turning point where I began to study for interactions, just like I studied for class.
And so you had this conversation with your professor. You come to this realization that you can study people skills the same way you might study math skills. What did you then go and do after that?
So I kind of broke it down just like you would any... I always wish there was a handbook for people. You know, I'd been given math textbooks, I'd been given history textbooks. The closest book I could find was The Quintessential Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I got my hands on that book, and that was a really good start. I was like, okay, this is the closest thing to a textbook I've ever found. But even still, I think, you know, Dale Carnegie must have been an extrovert in his day. And it's hard to learn people skills from an extrovert. And the reason for that is because extroverts get energy from people. They thrive around people. They have a sort of natural charisma. And so they often are the people who are positioned to teach people skills because they feel, well, it comes naturally to me, so I should teach it. The problem is I needed an introvert or an ambivert to teach me people skills. I needed someone teaching people skills who wasn't naturally good at it, who didn't naturally have charisma, because I was learning it from the ground up. And so the closest thing I could find to that were academics. Academics tend to be introverted or sometimes ambiverted. Ambiverted is, we could talk about it if you want, is sort of the in-between. Mm-hmm. And I found there was all this science of what Dale Carnegie was saying. So Dale Carnegie had some wonderful truisms. But I wanted to know, was there any kind of science that backed up what he had to say? And so I started to dive into the research databases on everything from conversation to body language to facial expressions to lie detection. And I found there were thousands of studies, but a lot of them were very filled with academic jargon or very hard to follow in a real world environment. A lot of them had to do with, you know, they tested, you know, 10 college seniors. And so I wondered, was there a way to kind of curate all these studies into a usable framework? And first it was for myself, but I also began to translate that to other people, fellow recovering awkward people, for people who wanted to learn people skills from a not naturally charismatic person, because I think that we learn very differently.
Yeah, I love that observation about maybe Dale Carnegie was an extrovert. And I think that's something you see a lot with a lot of different advice is I almost would rather learn from somebody who knows what it's like to not know the thing that they know.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think that what happens is when you try to learn soft skills from someone who's very charismatic, they say things like, just be yourself. Mm-hmm. And like, not to get too personal, too deep, but if you don't like yourself, that's a very, very hard piece of advice. And so for a long time, I didn't like myself. And so when I read in, you know, these books that I should be more authentic, you know, be yourself, just smile more. And I didn't really feel like smiling and I didn't really like myself. That was impossible advice. It was overwhelming advice. And so I thought there had to be a different way to go about it, where you were honoring who you were, and you didn't have to feign being an extrovert to be liked.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you were saying that you didn't like yourself. So did this method of studying people like a science, how did that pull you out of that eventually?
So much. And that was, I think, the greatest therapy I ever could have had without realizing it. I think what started to happen was there is this ideal of the highly charismatic person as the booming extrovert, right? Kind of that presidential personality where you walk into a room and you dazzle and you have funny stories and you're really impressive. And I had this idea that all the cool kids were that the only way to be liked was to be this bubbly extrovert, as a female, a very bubbly extrovert. And mm-hmm. that isn't my natural orientation. And as I started to go into the research and really learn what is charisma from a scientific perspective, what does the research say about charisma? I learned that it's not about being a bubbly extrovert. In fact, one of the things that I teach is that every single person has their own unique brand of charisma. And your life's goal is finding out what your brand is, what your flavor is. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is the bubbly extrovert and they do great. They're great podcast personalities. They're great, you know, they're great politicians. But there's also the quiet observer. There's also the powerful communicator. There's also the empathetic listener. There is the nurturer. All of these different flavors, and all of them are charismatic. And so what I learned was that I could have a different flavor and that was still okay. And not only was it okay, that was charismatic and people liked me better when I was more of myself and not pretending to be something that I wasn't.
So is a part of that flavor still being awkward?
Yes. So a funny, kind of funny story from a branding perspective. So you know, all the branding books out there, and I'm, you know, I love people skills, but I also love business. I love entrepreneurship. And so my bookshelf is filled with entrepreneurial books and people skills books and all kind of the branding's experts out there. You know, they say you have to position yourself as the expert. You have to be an expert in your field. You know, you have to put all of your accolades up front and your social proof and your media claims. And I went with that for a long time, trying to just beef up the professional credentialed side of the resume. And when I wrote my book, Captivate 2 years ago, I had a big argument with my publisher where I wanted to begin the book with all of my accolades, setting myself up as the expert. And she was like, Vanessa, that is not why people read your blog. That's not why people watch your videos. And we had a big fight. And she's like, what really makes you an expert is you're a recovering awkward person. And so I changed the first line of my book. Instead of all about how I'm the expert, the first line of my book is, hi, I'm Vanessa and I'm a recovering awkward person. And I think that is the reason we hit the bestseller list, is because of that opening line.
I'm impressed that a traditional publisher took that route, you know?
I have the most amazing editor. It's my editor, Nikki Papadopoulos, is a true vulnerability junkie, and she gave me the courage to do it. And I think that from a branding perspective, I've learned that actually not trying to hide my awkwardness, not pretending to be a bubbly extrovert all the time, the people who are struggling with it, if anyone's listening and thinking, God, I can think of 12 events, networking events I went to where I was like, put on a happy face, just smile through it. If you're that person, you're my person. Right? Like, you're the person I want to talk to because I think there is a better way.
So, I mean, how does still having awkwardness as a part of your own personal flavor of charisma, how does that manifest itself? Like, let's say some listeners out there or even the podcast host are recovering awkward people themselves.
Yes.
You know, just hypothetically. And, you know, how do they embrace that awkwardness in a way that's actually charismatic?
Oh yeah. Okay. So this happens all the time. Actually, this manifests being forthright with who you are and your flavor actually helps you be charismatic because you know what to ask for and people feel that it's actually more authentic. I'll give you a very specific example. So I go to a really big conference for entrepreneurs every year. It's a fantastic conference. It's invite only. And it's a lot of big, important people who go. And I was very nervous the first year I went because I felt like I wasn't important enough. And what was I doing there? What would I do when I met all of my heroes? Because all of my entrepreneurial heroes go. And I got there and conferences are really a lot. They're a lot of energy for a recovering awkward person. I'm an ambivert. So in certain situations, I can be extroverted and that feels good to me, but I also need a lot of recharge time. And there's also certain situations with ambiverts. You're an ambivert if you're a situational introvert or a situational extrovert, meaning there are certain places that really drain you very quickly. Certain people who really drain you very quickly, but there's also places that you thrive in. So in a conference, I have a mix of both. In a conference, I love the sessions. Oh my gosh, like sitting in the lecture room, having group masterminds around the lunch table, talking to people, masterminding and workshopping our business ideas, magical. Like that is extrovert land for me. I feel like I'm my best self. On the other hand, the happy hours after the conference, the networking hours, going to the bar afterwards, very loud events, it's like I am just done for. I'm immediately drained. I just really shut down in those loud environments. And a conference usually has both. So in the conference, my book had just come out, and I actually had gave it away in all the gift bags because I knew that hopefully that would speak for me when I was feeling a little bit awkward. So that was great. It was sort of a prop to get me out there. It pushed me out there because people then could ask me about the book. And because of that, because people had read literally the opening line, if you just opened the book, you would have read I was a recovering awkward person. People would say to me, hey, like, are you coming to the happy hour later? And I'd be like, oh man, I wish I could, but this recovering awkward girl has to go take a long hot bath in my hotel room. People would laugh. I'd be like, oh, great. I get it. Totally get it. I'd be like, but do you want to meet for breakfast tomorrow? You know, and a little bit quieter. You know, I'm happy to meet you for breakfast. Over and over again, people were so respectful of that. And in fact, one of the VIPs asked if I wanted to come to a big dinner with a bunch of VIPs. And it was at a big loud bar. And I was like, honestly, I'm so tired. And I feel like I need a little bit of recharge time. Is it okay if I take a rain check? I want to go take a bubble bath. That I got to do some recharge time. And he sent me a box of bubble bath after the event and said, I really respect you setting up boundaries for yourself. It was so great meeting you. Can't wait to get to know you more.
Mm-hmm. I relate to that so much. I'm an ambivert as well. And when I go to conferences, I really feel, feel a lot of pressure because in one way, I'm at this conference, I'd feel like I need to take advantage of it. Go, go, go. Mm-hmm. Seize the day. But at the same time, I really get drained and need the recharge time. So it sounds like if you were to translate what you were just saying into something that another person who mm-hmm. who had the same experience could follow, some sort of tips, how would you describe that?
Yeah. So I have a big tutorial on my blog about conferences. If you want to check it out, you can. Mm. But one of the big tips is to set aside recharge time that could also be networking time. So I totally agree with you, right? Conferences, you want to maximize it. That doesn't mean that you have to go to every session, every event, every break. So for example, that might be, if you work out by recharging, maybe asking people if they want to go on a hike with you, go on a walk with you. At this conference specifically, I remember I went on a hike with one of the people that I hadn't caught up with in a few years because we just didn't get a chance to talk. And I said, hey, I really want to go on a hike every day. You want to go on a hike with me. So is there a way that you can socialize while also recharging? Could be a hike. Could be instead of going to the big happy hour with everyone, you know, asking a few people if they want to do a quieter happy hour across the street at the restaurant across the street. It could also be setting up more breakfast meetings. It could also be that during the lunchtime, big lunchtime session, you know that midday you're going to need to take a break. That is your sacred nap time where you make sure that you get a room in the hotel or in a hotel across the street so you actually have somewhere to recharge and replug. It's mapping out your recharge time and adding mm-hmm. social time if you can, or guarding and making the time that your alone time really sacred. Otherwise, what happens is you show up at 8 a.m. with your badge and you don't leave till 12 a.m. and the next day you're totally done for.
We're going to take a quick break. We've got University of California, Irvine's Division of Continuing Education sponsoring the show. UC Irvine, did you know, they're ranked in the top 10 of public universities in the whole U.S. of A. Their Division of Continuing Education has been offering education to adult learners in Orange County since 1962. But you don't have to be in Orange County because they have online courses. UCI's online courses offer flexibility, a real immersive online classroom experience, and you get to collaborate with your peers. There's a ton of certificate programs and specialized studies programs available. You really have to go to the website and see the depth and breadth of everything that they offer. Whatever it is that you want to study, you can do it on your own time and you can advance your career in as little as 6 months, which that's fast. UCI's Division of Continuing Education wants you to know spring quarter is coming up. Registration is open right now. So visit ce.uci.edu/podcast. Enter the promo code podcast for 15% off one course. You're going to get a discount from University of California, Irvine. That's ce.uci.edu/podcast. Enter the word podcast to get 15% off one course. This offer is valid through March 31st, so get doing this now. Yeah, and this idea of getting people together for smaller, get-togethers. I think that's something that I try to do at conferences as well. It really helps, and you get a more intimate connection with those people. And ultimately, I think that's a lot more valuable than just getting a pile of business cards.
Yeah. I also, just a side note, I'm a big fan of being an inviter. So I've found a lot of social power. This is if this is part of your brand of charisma, this might work for you. Being an inviter is actually a very powerful thing. So if you go back to our high school days, when you walked into the lunchroom and you had no one to sit with, it was the worst feeling in the world. And adults, even though we look confident, even though we have our smartphones where we can go on Instagram if we want, we still like to be invited places. And so at conferences or even in the boardroom or in a lunchroom, your greatest tool is to be an inviter. So sit at a table that's close to where people exit the buffet line. And as you will walk by, if you see them kind of have that blank look where they're looking across the room, catch eyes with them and be like, hey, do you want to join me? That is not only a wonderful gift you can give to someone, it also puts you in a position where you can then drive the social interaction in a way that benefits you both. So inviting people to your lunch table. If you're sitting on a bench at a conference or at a bar, being like, hey, do you want to join me? I also really am a fan of, like, if you know there's no dinner plans at a conference, like, you know, typically they'll have a lunch off or a dinner off. You can say, hey, what are you doing for dinner? I was thinking about heading down to that Mexican place that had great reviews. Do you or anyone else you know want to join? Mm-hmm. When you position yourself in that way, it's such an easy way to make you feel included. And it also makes you an influencer almost instantly.
And of course, I think what maybe prevents people from doing that is they have some sort of fear of rejection, right? That they're going to invite somebody to sit down and they're going to say, oh no, I'm sitting over there. And now I feel like a total loser or something. Is that something that you experienced? Do you have any ways to get through that to actually make the invites?
Yeah. I mean, luckily I've very regularly had people say, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm already sitting with someone, or you know what, I already had dinner plans. That happens, and it always ends well, because what happens is either someone doesn't have somewhere to sit and they go, oh gosh, great, thanks, hi. Or they say, oh my gosh, you know, I already put my stuff down, but we should definitely catch up later. And I'm like, yeah, we should catch up later, no problem. So it also helps with later. I have seen those people at a different break and they're like, oh my gosh, sorry, we couldn't sit together. You know, let's catch up now. Or, oh, you already have dinner plans. No worries. We should definitely catch up tomorrow. Yeah, great. I'll see you at breakfast. It's never ended badly because it's a very easy, casual thing. They know that you're just doing them a favor. If you invite someone you don't know to sit with you at lunch, they know that you're just being kind.
And I like what you said about energy management, about this idea of having a time when you know that that's when you're going to recharge. But it also makes me think about kind of pre-conference prep as well for managing your social energy. Is that something that you do?
Oh, yes. So let's see if I can remember all the tips, and I'm happy to send the link to you afterwards. There's a lot of pre-conference prep that I do. First thing is, if you can get your hands on the attendee list or hop on the hashtag early, that's a really, really easy way to A, get more followers up front, and B, begin to make contacts ahead of time. So I was at a conference maybe 2 years ago now, and I saw on the speaker list that the editor of Entrepreneur Magazine was on the speaker list. Jason Pfeiffer is his name. And I was like, oh my God, I love Entrepreneur Magazine. I would love to figure out how I could, you know, help the magazine or maybe write for the magazine. And so I found Jason on Twitter. I tweeted him and I was like, hey, Jason, like, I'm going to be at this conference, hashtag conference. I would love to chat with you. Can't wait to see you there. That was it. Never got a reply, nothing. But I saw him the very first day at breakfast. I walked right over to him and I had a warm introduction from my own introduction. So basically, I was like, hey, Jason, I don't know if you remember, I tweeted you a couple of weeks ago. It's so good to meet you finally in person. And he was like, oh yeah, I saw that tweet. We chatted and he ended up giving me 10 columns in the magazine to write about. So that never would have happened had I not reached out ahead of time. And I was my own warm introduction and that was okay. So that's just one of the things, is not only reaching out to VIPs and other people who are attending, but also hopping on the conference hashtag ahead of time. Getting the schedule ahead of time and trying to pace out in a conference schedule, you have a couple different opportunities. You have learning, so attending sessions. you have VIP networking. So trying to get one-on-ones, trying to reach out to cold one-on-ones. You have open networking. So just trying to meet new people wherever they are, however they are. Or lastly, reaching out to old contacts. So maintaining your old contacts or friends that you see. That's four different things that you have to carve out time for. So looking at the schedule and figuring out, okay, when am I doing what? For example, I typically like to do hikes, workouts, things around the city with old contacts. I like to reserve breakfast meetings when I'm the most fresh for VIPs. I usually do my big open networking at lunches, middle of the day when I'm not too tired. And I try to do all my recharge time at night. That's for me, but it could be totally opposite for you, depending on mm-hmm. if you like to sleep in or not. So it was a lot really quickly, but I think that if you can do that even a little bit ahead of time, it really helps.
It really depends upon, it's all about knowing your energy and the way that it ebbs and flows and being able to plan for that.
Exactly. And also even just putting a little bit of mental energy towards this, I think it sets you up because it's almost like social insurance. You know, what you're really worried about at a conference or even like a meeting or any kind of event, your biggest worry is, was that a waste of time? Right? Like, I think that's our biggest worry. Oh, I didn't take advantage of that opportunity. It was too much money. It was too much time. So biggest waste of time, or I was my worst self. Those are the two things I think most of us worry about before a big event. Like, you show up to a networking event, you were dreading it all week, didn't want to go. You had a hard day. You show up and you're like, oh, why am I here? You meet someone, you're kind of in a cranky mood, you're a little bit hangry, you're a little bit bored. And that's even worse than not going. It's worse to go and make a bad first impression than not go at all. And so doing a little bit of social planning gives you social insurance in that you're not going to have a really bad first impression or bad experience because you're cranky, you're hangry. And that second, you're not going to waste your time by going.
Yeah, I like this because one of the things I like to do before I do a trip like that is sometimes I'll sit down because I know this feeling of having gone to a conference. You've traveled so far, you spend all this money, and you leave. And as you're leaving, you have this feeling like, oh, I really blew it. Like I didn't take advantage. And so I guess it's like a pre-mortem of sit down and picture in your mind, like what would it what are the things that if I didn't do, I would leave feeling this way?
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea.
Or what are the things that if I did them, I would leave feeling good or like I had accomplished something? And sometimes it turns out that there's really only one or two items in my experience that are really kind of the make or break on the feeling of it. And like, no, whether there's actual objective I got more out of it or not, that's anybody's guess.
Yeah, it like sets you up for, you know, if it was successful or not, and it gives you objectives. And anytime you have objectives, it makes your energy also more focused. Like if you walk into an event and you're like, I don't know why I'm here, but I'm here. it kind of like diffuses your social energy. Whereas if you know, my goal is to make three really good contacts, that's a very, very focused social goal.
Yes, I like that. Having some kind of a measurable goal and a realistic one too, to make three good contacts at a conference, which often happens, is great. It's way better than shaking 50 hands in my experience.
And you can get very creative with social goals. So I'm big into social goals. I drive a lot of my students to make them, and they don't have to be, they can be like, I want to make three good contacts, or, you know, I want to add 50 quality contacts to my LinkedIn. They could also be like less measurable than that. That's okay. It could also be like, I want to help someone with one piece of advice, or I want to learn something new in the next hour, or I want to get one good TV show and good book recommendation. And the reason why that's a really specific one is because if you go into it knowing that, like, for example, you're out of Netflix shows, you just don't know what to watch next. When you're having conversation and the conversation kind of dies down and you're like, what do I talk about next? You can be like, hey, like, this is totally random, but are you addicted to any Netflix shows recently? I just ran out of stuff to watch. So it also can drive your conversations when you're like, so what do you do? Great.
I like that. I mean, depending upon a person's personality, but I can imagine being at some kind of a network event where I would feel a little bit aimless. And if I have this goal in my mind, like, oh, I need to just get a Netflix recommendation. Then suddenly that provides a little bit of direction and motivation to my actions.
Yeah. And taking it one step further, one thing that I really encourage is use of the Franklin effect. So the Franklin effect is that when you ask people for a favor, you become more likable. And that's very counterintuitive. You would think that giving someone a favor makes you more likable. Actually, asking someone for help makes you more likable. And there's some really interesting science behind it that I'm happy to share if you'd like. But basically, it's how can you think about asking for more favors in a genuine way? And my favorite way to use the Franklin effect is advice. So very regularly, when I go into any kind of business situation or a networking event, I will think to myself, what's one piece of advice I need right now? Like if I'm revamping my blog, or if I want to spice up my YouTube channel, or if I'm having pricing problems, I might go into the event looking for advice on that. And then when I meet someone who I think knows about that topic or issue, I can say, hey, like, you know, one thing I've really been struggling with, I would love your advice if you have any, is I'm really trying to revamp my blog on the SEO side. You seem to really have mastered that. Do you have any tips for me? That's a very great way to, one, get help that you need, but also, two, have directed conversation that gears towards the Franklin effect.
Mm. Well, and tell us why it's called the Franklin effect, and tell us about that science.
Yeah, it's so fun. So it's named after Benjamin Franklin. So Benjamin Franklin, I think, is the one who discovered this idea. He wrote about it in one of his memoirs, where he had a man in government, I think it was in the Senate, I don't remember exactly, who didn't like him. They were on opposite sides of the table. Different party, hated each other, weren't getting along. And he said, you know, I'm going to ask him for a favor to try to have something to talk about with him. And he knew that this man also loved reading. Benjamin Franklin was an avid reader. He also knew this man had a very big library. So he sent a note to this gentleman and he asked to borrow a book from his library, a hard to get book from his library. He said, I really been dying to read this book. I know that you have it. Would you be open to me borrowing it? And the man said, of course, here's a copy of the book. Return it whenever you have a chance. And they talked about the book and they were friends ever since. And so he discovered this idea that asking for a favor actually is the best bridge you can have to another person. And so a university decided to test this theory, where they had, they set up an experiment, very clever experiment, where they had an experimenter do a little game with the participant, and the participant would win money. Like, I think it was like $5. And at the end of the experiment, there was three different trials. The first trial, they gave them the money and they walked away. Fine. Second trial, the experimenter said, hey, can I ask for a favor? I'm running a little bit of short on funding. Would you mind giving me back the $5? I could really use the money on the funding. Okay. And the third one is, I think it was a neutral one, where they said they were having trouble with funding, but they didn't ask for the money back. Well, as you can guess, the one where the experimenter asked for the money back after this poor participant had spent an hour doing this dumb math game rated the experimenter as more likable.
Mm.
And that's shocking. Here's this experimenter who's saying, I run out of money and I need all your money back. So there was no reason for you to spend your entire hour in this lab. That experimenter was more likable.
I would love to see a variation of that, where the experimenter is really mean to the participant first, to simulate the being a rival effect that Franklin was experiencing.
I don't remember. It's been a while since I read the study. They might have had something like that. They might have actually.
It worked for Franklin.
It worked for Franklin. I think it would work. I think it would work. I mean, my experience with this Franklin effect is it works. It works.
And it's hard to do. You know, when it's a hard posture to put yourself in. Because you got to be really humble to come up to somebody and say, you know, it seems like you know a lot about this thing, and I'm really lost when it comes to this. You know, it just even practicing saying it, you know, it's a little bit tough for me to do it.
Yeah.
You got to get over yourself.
Yeah, you got to get over yourself, and boy, does that feel good, right? Like, that feels so good when you ask someone, you're like, I am not good at this. Tell me how to be better. And you see them light up because they're so excited to help you.
Well, yeah, it feels great for them. I mean, it's like a judo move or something. You know, all the energy comes out of you, and gets transferred to that person, and then it starts this virtuous cycle.
I think it is judo. I think a lot. I mean, I call all of our skills people hacks. I think it is everything that I teach is kind of like a judo move that hopefully you weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vanessa Van Edwards, I recommend everybody check out your book, Captivate: The Science of Succeeding with People. It is that handbook that you were wishing for back when you were, a more awkward person, a less charismatic awkward person. Is there anywhere else that you'd like for people to get more of you?
Yeah. So our website is scienceofpeople.com. We have a something called People School. It's our big flagship course. If you want to really get advanced, I have a little free audio guide you can check out where I walk you through ambivert, extrovert, introvert, and all of our research is up there. So I hope this was helpful, and thanks so much for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Is Love Your Work helping you find your unique creative voice? Does it bring you the inspiration and motivation you need to become the creator and human you want to be? If so, please be a part of making this a special and nourishing and thoughtful show. Support the show on Patreon. You'll be an even bigger part of this show than you already are. If you contribute just a coffee a month, you'll be helping support the hosting and production of Love Your Work. Everyone has some unique creative gift to offer the world. Together, we can give people the tools they need to bring that work into the world. The world will be better off for it. Visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/cadavy. This is a different kind of model for supporting the work that you love. The choice is yours. Vote with your dollars, put your money where your mind is, and keep Love Your Work going. Visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/cadavy. As a thank you, you'll get early access, bonus content, and a discount on Love Your Work merchandise. Learn more at patreon.com/cadavy. That's patreon.com/KADAVY. And if you can't support the show financially, and you've listened to at least 3 episodes, can you do me a favor? Write a review on Apple Podcasts. You can consider it your donation to help support the show. Love Your Work is brought to you in part by our Patreon supporters, such as mini sponsors Roxana Maynard of Agility Alchemist at agilityalchemist.com and Paula Spriggs, and top supporters such as Jeffrey Mason and Vitas Pinkovicius. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Cadavy. The theme music for this show is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Cadavy, Inc.